Well, Jay, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little cooped up here. It's time for a move, I think. Get some space, some bigger yard, that kind of thing. What do you think?
You are really going to move? But that's a big deal. Like, you can't do
it
that
in
your
big deal.
You're scared to even leave your living room.
What seems like a big deal moving isn't when you use the right people. You can use these sell your own home situations where you're bartering with a guy in your driveway for 45 minutes and you end up selling for $3, or you can use a professional that makes moving actually simple. Who are we going to use?
But the problem is obviously Tom, but my worry is you're so far, you're in Orleans.
Tom will come to Orleans. He'll go to Russell. He'll go to Clarence Creek. He'll go to west of the Westy Village, wherever it is out there. He'll go anywhere for you and make that experience that you were talking about of nervous or a lot of work, make it seem like nothing. Bastion and Ferguson will literally smooth out the easiest move of your life.
Wow, even in Orleans, I just can't get over that.
Yeah, once you hit 10th line, 11th line, 14th line, he's still coming. He's driving in his brand new Dodge Caravan, carries his family around in, will sell your home. That's what I'm looking for, an easy ride with Bastion and Ferguson. Look them up. He's going to sell you quick and easy. Jerry Gray, you are sleeping, 2 o'clock in the morning. You wake up, you turn over, you see what you think is a spider on your wall. Might not be. Do you go back to sleep or go investigate?
Want to answer that?
Yeah.
See, childish questions.
Yep.
Go back to sleep.
Okay, I was going to give that to Steve, but I knew the answer. He'd go up and smack it with a shoe. Jason Whiting, if I handed you a skipping rope right now, how many could you get before you screw up?
Oh, 150. Easy.
Wow. Oh, my.
You're bringing a skipping rope next show.
Okay.
Steve. It's a big girly man.
Steve O'Kane, you versus Jerry Gray. One match, $1 million for the winner, connect four. Who wins?
I'd win it. Sorry, Jerry. I'm going to take that.
Wow. I feel like connect four is.
Yes, there you go. There's the win right there. I'm not explaining the instructions to him. I'm going right for the win.
All right. Jerry Gray, Canadian Soccer Hall of Fame, 35 caps for Canada. An amazing goal versus Mexico. You got to check YouTube. We'll get into that more. That was sick.
I love that goal.
Played in the World Cup in 1986, the Olympics in 1984. Pro career that lasted over 11 years with teams like the Blizzard, the Cosmos, the Steelers. I could go on for the next hour on accolades here. But we'll get into that. But thank you for coming. We appreciate it. We've got a true Canadian legend here with us. Steve, I want you to take it.
Let me jump in. First of all, the whole reason I started a podcast was to have talks like this with people from my family, like Jerry, so we could brag. It's really only about O'Kane's, Gray's, McEnany's bragging. And if the world wants to hear, they can hear. If not, they can't. We're good looking men. We're athletic. Even when we lose our hair, it doesn't matter. We're still, we have charm. So I can't wait to talk about this. I told Bunbury last week, second best Canadian ever. Now we have the top. We've got him here. 5'7", two-footed, center mid, Barca-esque before Barca-esque was even something back in the day. Like, just what a player. And I got a few things I got to get out before we start. And then, Mark, you can take back over. First thing, he lived with me for a year when he was with Ottawa Intrepid.
Yep.
Wow. And just imagine, like, in a, like a 12-year-old kid with a pro soccer player. It was unbelievable. Like, just picking his brain, going to games. For those who are Catholic and know what communion is, he was my my sponsor, right? You can't have your parents as a sponsor. I had Jerry Gray. So people are like, oh, you know, who's your sponsor? And one kid's like, oh, you know, my Uncle Ted, he's a used car salesman. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Who's your sponsor, Steve? I'm like, no, Jerry Gray. Like, he's a pro soccer player. Like, he's on Canada. Like, I don't know. I mean, he's okay, like, if you like that. So, like, my street cred was off the chart. Off the chart. And then the goal at the Azteca, like, let's talk about that at least every 5 minutes in this interview.
Unreal.
But Jay and I have a friend, actually, you too, Mark, you know, we have a friend, Jose. He's Mexican. He's from Mexico City. He played for Club America, Jerry. And you've scored more goals at the Azteca than him. I can't wait till he hears that. So just brilliant. I had to gush a little bit. We'll go from there.
So we'll jump in real quick here and start from the beginning. Jerry, you moved here when you were 12, according to the old internet, okay, from Glasgow, correct?
Yep.
How, okay, we're a big development soccer podcast. We're all youth coaches. We delve into that stuff all the time. Can you talk about your development in Glasgow, or if there was any, or were you in a club? Were you coach? Were you overcoach, or did you just play in the street? Whatever. You tell us your development in the UK.
I would say that ever since you're a kid in Scotland or whatever, or even the UK, or you carry a ball everywhere you go. And when you carry a ball everywhere you go, you're knocking against a wall, or you're playing in the backyard. We didn't have backyards then. It was like you're playing in the crap in the, where the middens used to be. Stephen might know what that is. Mm-hmm. But you everywhere you went, you just had a ball with you and you just kicked it, and you learned how to, play with the ball.
You weren't playing anything organized.
There was no organization at all. It was just a matter of, you play for your school, and I used to have Mr. McKay was the math teacher or whatever, or the one that he just took the team. And other than that, it was just, there was no organization at all. You just played in the back. You played with your buddies. It was 10v10 or 9v9. You played in the school. There was no organization at all. And you now, just played for fun.
Do you think that that's better than what we do now with, like, you know, organizing U6s playing, organizing, everything's organized, you got to pay for everything? Like, what do you think's better, or if there's a happy medium, or what do you think?
My personal opinion, I would say that the kids at the younger ages should just play for fun, play because they want to play because they like to play. I think that to be organized, that's one thing, but it's to me, it's like, you got to play because you like to play. Because you know what, though, if you're going to run for half an hour, an hour, or 2 hours a day, you do that because you want to do it. It's not because some freaking coach is telling you to do it. So,
yeah.
Personal opinion. Yeah.
So you moved here then at 12. Was it like a completely different world, even coming to Canada, in terms of the soccer landscape? I mean, was it now, were you playing for a registered club at 12, 13, 14, or how did that work?
Well, when my dad said I was going to play in the Bantam League, and I'm going, like, what the hell's a Bantam League? I had no idea what the hell it was. But what it was just a matter of, it was the local club team is what it was. And I had, the first guy I had was a guy called Hans Mueller, German guy, you know, local guy,
yeah,
a dad, right? Whatever it was. And, it was just a matter of, at that point in time, was it Bantam? Was it U13? Was there Pee Wee Bantam? What is it?
No idea.
Sounds like hockey, man. Same thing, but I can't tell you the age. Yeah.
Right. But it was like more like he took the team and away we went. But we never did any training. It was just a matter of, you might have played one practice a week and game in a weekend. That was it.
Can I jump in there? Because this is like big for me. What what separated you from someone else? Like, there was probably someone on your team, and no disrespect, because I think you're unbelievable. But, like, there's always that story of someone who was better than you that didn't make it. Why did you make it over that guy who was maybe better than you at that age?
I would say...
Are you saying no one was better than you?
Say
it. It's fair.
Jason, I would say this. There's like when I came from Scotland, right?
Yeah.
There was no Canadian player in my local league, right? That was better.
Yeah.
I did it 24/7. Okay. Right? I did it every day. I had a ball with me every day. And it's like at that point in time in my career, there was in the Malton Youth Soccer Association, there was no one better.
Let me interject here, because you brought up your dad and I'm desperate. I almost wanted to bring Tommy on over you, because I think like that guy's worth a movie or a Netflix series, we say all the time here. His dad, Tommy Gray, his mom, Winnie Gray, my uncle and aunt, like unbelievable people, like nicest ever. But let's talk about your dad a little bit. He could be the guy on So I Married an Axe Murderer, the dad, like the Scottish.
Yep.
What a guy. He laughed 24 hours a day. What did he do when he heard Bantam? And then he had to tell you, he must have just like, I couldn't imagine that interaction.
I don't think, he just told me, hey, there's a Bantam League. You get to play soccer over here, or football over here, right? And you're good to go. He didn't know. We didn't know. We're immigrants, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we just come over and for a better lifestyle and a better opportunities for his kids.
Yeah. So moving on through that, through your Bantams and your that kind of thing, you're 19 when you signed with the Whitecaps. Is that accurate or close?
I was drafted out of high school.
Wow.
So how did that process work? Like there was a draft, or like, did they just contact your parents, or how did they see you? How did they know you?
What happened was that I was in the Ontario provincial team, and like from Malton to like Scarborough to like the Ontario provincial team. I was telling a story about my uncle. My dad, like when I was 12 years old, my uncle took me from Pal. Do you know Jimmy? Do you know my uncle Pal, Jimmy?
I know. Yeah.
Okay. So my dad's brother, my mom and dad worked, so therefore they took me to work. But my uncle took me over to Scarborough from Toronto, from Malton. And we went on a bus, we went on a subway, we get on a bus again. And then I made the U13 Ontario team. Wow. Right. So therefore, once I got in the system, right, I went from the 13s to I think it was the 14s and 15s. So how I got drafted was that I played in the U16 provincial finals in BC.
Huh.
And the coach comes up to me and he goes like, hey, guess what? These guys want to draft you. And I'm going like, who? Like, I didn't know there was a team called the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Wow.
Because I went and saw Toronto Metro Croatia against when Pele came in.
Yeah. Right?
And I went and saw Toronto Metro Croatia when Beckenbauer came. And that was the only team I knew. It was a Toronto Metro Croatia. And all of a sudden, some guy, like I say, when I was 18, some guy turns like, hey, you were drafted by the Whitecaps. I was like, who the hell are the Whitecaps? I had no idea.
Did you even know what a draft was?
No.
That's amazing.
That's unreal. Like, it's funny. Similar story with Alex Bunbury last week. Like, just started playing soccer at like 28, and it's like, play. You know what I mean? Like, he just started so late, and then he's like with the Impact. And just, I played soccer like since I was one, and I barely made a premier team locally. Like, it's insane. So with that, when you signed with the Whitecaps, now I notice in careers of your generation, okay, I notice that you guys play outdoor with the, you know, Whitecaps or whoever, and then I'm looking and you and I'm seeing these indoor teams, and then back to outdoor, indoor, outdoor. What was the situation with that? Like, was it to keep earning a paycheck, or was it, how was it? Were they affiliated? Tell us a bit about the indoor stuff.
I think at that point in time, like, you know, the outdoor deal was like, that was the main focus.
Mm-hmm.
The indoor came about, so therefore we were in a contract. So it was like, your asses are playing.
Wow.
Wow. Oh, because they had, yeah, you're a lot of them had indoor and outdoor.
The Whitecaps, you know, like for me, it was the Whitecaps. It was Chicago. It was Tacoma, St. Louis, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, so there was like, there was both, if you were on a contract, so that's what they did. They were keeping the game surviving, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what they did. And that's what you had to do to survive, I guess.
Yeah.
What was it like? Was it a grind? Like, was indoor more of a grind? Like, I just feel like is it winter going in all these arenas?
I would say that it was just another season, right? Because number one, we were pretty young at the time. I thought I was young at the time. So therefore, I could do it, right? But the older you get, the harder it becomes, right? Mm-hmm. But I would say that, it was good both ways. But and again, and for me as well, also the national team in between that. So to me, it was like, when I say I probably played 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing. But I also, to me, it was like 12 outdoor, or don't know, let's say 10 outdoor, 6 indoor, right? And then I played national team. So it was like, to me, it was like a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just continuous.
Do you think that playing indoor developed you guys, like helped you develop better? Like, did it bring a whole new aspect to your games?
It was a different game. I would say that it was, and it was a faster game, and it was. I thought I personally adapted well, right? Because I could play outdoor and I could play indoor, so it was just a different game, and and at that point in time, if I could make all my money playing outdoor, then I'd probably do that. But I had to make. I had wife. I had the kids. You're doing both.
Yeah, because my head went with that was because you guys were playing so much indoor and indoor, I mean, now is seen as such a great development tool that must have been some sort of, you know, propeller for you guys, you know, qualifying for the Olympics and the World Cups. Like, maybe because of that, I mean, because Canada soccer from whatever many years ago was seen as archaic and long ball and, you know, all this kind of thing. But with you guys doing the indoor outdoor thing, do you think that maybe devalued, like, you know, like what people look back now, like, are you underappreciated? Are you like, as that team, you know, I'm thinking the indoor must have done something.
I think that the squad of players that came up on the youth team from 78 was a tremendous squad. I mean, like, I heard Alex say last week, like, you know, they qualified for in Moscow, I think it was.
Yeah.
Is that right? But we were the first team that went out of the bracket and went to the Youth World Cup in 79. We set the standard to a certain degree. And you've got, you know, Mike Sweeney, Ian Bridge, you know, Dan Lenarduzzi, you got all these players. I mean, you got all, I mean.
But how did they get so far?
I think you set the highway. Sorry?
Why were you guys so good? Like, what made you guys? What do you think?
You know what? Because I think we're a bunch of freaking Canadian kids just worked our ass off.
Yeah.
Right. And we worked and we worked as a team. And I thought we were coached well. Like, I mean, I heard Alex say about 20 Taylor. But I mean, there was a guy called Barry Clark who was a freaking teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he did an awesome job. He took a bunch of kids, to me, it's like, we worked our ass off and we worked as a team, and you know what? We got results. And I think that carried on for the national team going forward.
I think I'd echo what Mark's getting at. Just my opinion, and mate, you're pretty humble to say stuff too, Jerry. I definitely think you work, but what I would say, and even just from remembering watching you as a kid, like, I remember seeing you and you could play with both feet. You could, you know, you're playing back to the left and right back. You're getting it. You're spinning. It wasn't just all a very stereotypical, what Mark's getting at, North American, U.S. type game that just hammer it far forward. Like, you guys played. I think it's a very underappreciated generation. And I think even today, like, it's been the only generation that made it into a World Cup. And I think, you know, maybe once you get to those levels, your work ethic is what's going to keep you there and all that. But I just think you look at them, the quality of players and how they actually played the game. It wasn't that stereotype, you know, like, I think that was impressive. And maybe indoor helped, maybe the fact you just played all the time and you were a slave to your contract, but like you just, there was a lot of quality there.
Yeah, no question about it. We had a lot of technical ability. We had, we could play the game. We had the physical ability to a certain degree, right?
Yeah.
So we were good players. Okay, I would say that we weren't Maradona, but we competed when we played against Maradona. We kicked his ass, but that's another story.
Aha. So here's where my head goes next with that. You guys were like a bit of a almost a melting pot type thing. With there was a heavy UK influx, right, in terms of the mix in the national team.
When you say you guys, who are you talking about?
The national team.
For when? Back when I was playing?
Yeah, when you were playing, in terms of like, I don't know, the Millers, the Valentines, the David Normans, Paul James, like all the ones that came from the UK. Do you think that kind of foreign influence and that, you know, professional kind of helped the Canadian kids raise their standard? Or flip side, were there cliques in the dressing room because of the foreign kind of influence?
There was no foreign people in the Canadian dressing room. It was all Canadian. We represented Canada, and we went out and we fucking kicked ass.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So you were like, but you, most of you had gotten here when you were like 10, 11, 12, like you said. So you may have come from Glasgow, but you're Canadian.
But Mike Sweeney's from Squamish. You know where Squamish is?
No.
It's in the middle of freaking nowhere. It's halfway between Vancouver and Whistler, BC.
It's where Schitt's Creek
was though. Irish, and his mom was Irish. But you know what though, Ian Bridge from Victoria, right? So therefore, it's like we weren't Scottish, we weren't English, we weren't Irish. When we went on the field, we were Canadian.
Yeah. Sweeney was some underrated player, to be honest. Like I don't think that guy. When I go back and look at things, the amount of like that guy was like an Andy Robertson almost. Like just getting balls knocked in.
Yeah.
Very similar type player, like very underrated. Like I really loved watching that guy.
Yeah, well, I would agree.
So I'm going to switch it to the 1984 Olympics before the World Cup in LA. Quick question. Were you kind of pissed that it wasn't in like some far location, like, some cool location? Or were you okay that it was just
LA? Is pretty nice.
Yeah, but come on. The Olympics.
Well, okay, let me tell you though. Okay, you know what though? The Olympics are in LA, but guess what? Canada never even got to LA.
What do you mean?
So when the qualifying rounds for the Olympics, the first qualifying round was actually held in Harvard in Boston.
Wow.
It was on the East Coast. When we first flew into the Olympics, we went to Boston and we played in Boston. We played two games in Boston and then we played one game in Maryland, but it was in Maryland, right? So we had three games to qualify.
Yeah.
When we got to the quarterfinals was actually in Santa Clara.
Hmm.
So therefore, I was playing for New York at the time.
Yeah.
Right. So I got to go to Boston and play in the first qualifying rounds. I got to go to Annapolis. That's where the second one was, and play in the third one of the third games. We went to the quarterfinals in Stanford, or Santa Clara, beg your pardon. And then, because we got knocked out, I had to go back to freaking New York because I was under contract.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Some of the other guys, the guys who weren't under contract, then they went on to L.A. and we went through this closing ceremonies.
So you didn't even join in, like, opening closing ceremonies. You were in an Olympic Village.
I got like 17 pages of Olympic Village questions. I'm devastated right now.
Done. Don't you know Mary Lou Retton, Jerry? I told him you
Come
knew
on.
her.
Come on. Crazy talk.
Oh, my God. That's
incredible. That's amazing.
Sorry, Mark. I didn't mean to like shoot your bubble.
Shut it down.
No, but what I'm saying is like, again, it's like, it doesn't matter because you know what, though? We should have went to LA.
Yeah.
Because we should have won the freaking quarterfinal game, and we did.
Who is it again?
Brazil. In penalties. Right? Am I right?
Yeah, I scored a goal, by the way, and then it took it back. It'd have been
really?
Two
no way. Went
Who was on that Brazil team? Any crazy people you remember?
I don't know. No, they remember me. I don't remember them.
Oh, I love that answer. Wow. All right. Well,
that's brilliant. So
Let me just flip through my village questions here real quick and throw them on the ground. You scored in a World Cup qualifier against Mexico away at the Azteca.
Amazing.
You chipped the keeper from a free kick. Literally, I only saw that goal for the first time not long ago, and it's probably my favorite Canada goal now ever. How did you always think chip there, or was that like a last second audible?
You know what? It wasn't a chip. It was a little dink.
Yeah, a little dink sounds better.
That sounds way better. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you devalued his goal, Mark, and he had to bring it back.
Hey, well, he skipped my Olympic Village questions. This goal's nothing now. Yeah. No, but seriously.
That was a good goal.
Oh, man.
That was amazing.
Do you think about that at least once a week? Twice, once every 2 weeks.
Come on, Jerry.
What? You know what, I'd have that on loop on my computer if that was
me. I would have it on a t-shirt.
It means, you know what, though? Been there, done that. We're good, right?
Wow. Wow. You know what? We're going to put that, like, we've got an Instagram account. We're going to put that on. I'm going to loop it as long as Instagram will allow me before they put it out.
I don't know what an Instagram account is. I don't have one.
Don't worry. You don't care about the goal. Been there, done that. We're putting it up there for everybody else. You know what? What I thought, actually, but I remember it. I watched it again. When I watched it again, I wondered, and I might be really devaluing you, so you can swear at me because we're related. It looks maybe like a rehearsed set piece, or was that off the cuff, Jerry Gray?
A reverse set piece, meaning what?
Right. Like, not a reverse, rehearsed. Like, it looks like one guy goes in, and like you're going to cross it to him, and then you dink
on. Oh, no. It was on from day one. It was going over the wall, top right-hand corner.
Left foot, too? Like, woo!
Wow.
Oh, that's right. That's my bad foot as well.
Yeah.
Unreal, man.
Got the wedge out? Oh, it was beauty.
Yeah. That's
actually the amazing story behind that was this. Like, I'll tell you the story behind that was that if you look at it, when the guy I jump into his arms after I score the goal, another Scottish guy called John McGrain. You know John McGrain?
I don't know.
Okay, so John McGrain, he hated me.
Yeah, right? Really?
Oh yeah. A lot of the guys did, because I was full of confidence, right? Yeah. And I would tell him what to do. Yeah. Right? And after that, he loved me.
I would too. That's incredible.
Yeah. Also, he had no choice.
That's between the four of us.
He
had no choice but to catch you anyway. So if he hated you or not, you were in his arms.
I was going to his arms. Yeah,
we were already there. Yeah,
we were getting close that night.
Wily Scottish, like, scores the goal, but not just that, thinking about how to mend bridges and get the team better. Brilliant, Jerry.
Yeah. So from there, we're going to skip World Cup 1986. Okay. I'm not going to get into the boring questions of how did it feel to be in a World Cup? No, whatever. I want to know, you played two games out of the three. How pissed were you when you didn't start against France?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it's my choice.
What?
Wow. I think I just unraveled a beautiful story. Hang on. Let me get my water. Okay, go.
Carry on.
No, because it was my choice. Because I was supposed to start, and I should have started. But I thought I tweaked my hamstring, like the day before or whatever. So it was my choice to either start and then play one game or start second, third game. You can ask Tony Waiters, but that was my recollection. Let's just say that. But to me, it was like, I would love to have played against France. I would love to have played against Platini, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't.
You would have been right up against the men.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, it was either, I was trying to kind of play one game, or I could possibly play two or three, potentially go full.
Yeah. Sorry, Jerry. I was just going to say, or can you chase Platini on with a hammy tear and maybe go out or maybe let them down?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Didn't you break your leg before that World Cup?
I broke my leg in 84.
Okay. I thought it was a little more recent. I'll be honest, it's another O'Kane family memory. I remember my dad coming in, like, and I'm reading the Auto Citizen Sports and all that, and he said you broke your leg. And I just remember as a kid, I still have this anxiety of being like, oh my God, it's close to the World Cup. Like, I felt like it was a little closer in that. But like, that scared the whole family. But I guess you were kind of recovered from that.
Yes, I like that, because what happened is on the qualifying rounds, I came back 6 months later.
Yeah.
It happened in January, I came back 6 months later. And then Canada was qualifying. And when they qualified, I never played a game. But I played a game, but I was always on the bench.
Yeah.
If they needed me, I'd come in, right? Yeah. But it would be a last resort to a certain degree because I was still recovering from a broken leg.
Yeah. Were you good enough to play at that World Cup?
Yes.
Were you good enough to play in like the Russian team or the French team?
I would say close. Yes, to close.
So you played against Hungary and the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Who was better?
Soviet Union.
By far, okay. This is a bit of a, not a biased question, but I have Ukrainian heritage. So Blokhin. Do you remember Blokhin, striker? Yeah. No, I'm devastated.
He remembers me.
He remembers
you. Yeah. I love that. You always go to that.
It's unpenetrable when you say that. It's just like, no, there's nothing so you can do. But who do you remember the most from that World Cup playing against? Was there somebody that you were just like, this guy's unplayable?
No.
Other than Jerry Gray?
To me, it'd be Platini. If I was to say, I mean he was the man. Yeah. He's the top dog. I mean, and I missed him. But some of the other, I mean, the Russian team, though, the Russian team were like, they were like robots. They yeah. were like machines, right?
Lobanovsky.
That's what I remember from that.
Yeah.
So
Ukrainian, by the way.
Why didn't you qualify? Like, what held you guys back? What was the reason?
You know what? Honestly, I would. Was this going viral? Potentially viral?
Of course, it's already going viral because of you ruined Mark's question.
Yeah.
I think that here's my thoughts, right? My thing is that when Canada went to the World Cup, they went not to lose.
Yeah.
Right? They went not to lose. They went to go like, we're going to go. I mean, I love 20 waiters, right? But we went not to lose.
Yeah.
When I look at the U.S. team the following 4 years later, they get their asses kicked, right? But at least they tried to play.
Yeah.
And I think if Canada tried to play, and let's, you know what though, if we get beat 6-0, who gives a crap?
Yeah.
Right? Just us getting to the World Cup was like us winning the World Cup.
That's the accomplishment.
Wrong mentality. Yeah.
Right. So to me it's like, let's go move the game forward and try and score goals. We tried to stop goals instead of trying to score goals.
Yeah.
I don't think we didn't have any shots in the World Cup.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
So right? With that, you played under Barry Clark, Tony Waiters, Bob Bearpark, Tony Taylor, and Leonard Doozy. Which one of those would you have loved to have been the coach at the World Cup?
You mean... Yeah, pick one of them to the coach of the World Cup.
If you could go do it again with one of those managers you played
under. I never had Leonard Doozy.
You never did. It never crossed over. Okay.
I would say, you know what though? I don't know. Bob Bearpark was always the assistant coach.
Yeah.
Okay. So Tony Waiters did a good job, but I think Tony should have let us play.
Yeah.
Right? That's my only thing. But Barry Clark, he was a school teacher, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know. I mean, he let the youth team play.
Yeah.
But Tony Taylor let the youth, Alex said, that Tony Taylor let, he had the system involved for the youth team. Let them play, right? It's, you got to, to me, it's like, you got to take that same mentality and you go, that's how you grow, right? You're like, let's go do it. Let's go give it a bash, right? Yeah.
Be brave.
Hey, learn from it.
Yeah, be brave. Be brave. Like, and you know what? Like, you know, I'll play devil's advocate. I agree with your answer 1,000%. But like, you're Tony Waiters heading into the first World Cup. And you got to have balls to be brave and to do like you said, Jerry. You know, we might lose 6-0, but we might win and get to the next round, and then I'm a hero. Then there's a statue of me. Like, you know, so I think, Jay, you want to jump in, eh, with the teacher piece?
Yeah, just, well, I'm a teacher too, so I love that. I know that you love, like, it's obvious that you had an affinity for the teacher. He probably communicated well and probably helped you guys not only as a team but individually, I'm assuming. But you must have been organized defensively, and that's important. Like, with any team, you know, even in a war, you have to defend your country first before you can attack. Like, there must have been, like, you must have felt good that you were organized defensively, but you just wanted that little piece. Just say, Jerry, go, just go for it when you're in this zone. Like, just go, express yourself. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I think, like you say, you gotta be solid at the back. Right. But I thought we were.
Yeah.
You had Randy Samuels, Ian Bridge, right. You had Bruce Wilson. You had Leonard Doozy on the right-hand side. You had Tina Lettieri at the back, right? You had Randy Reagan, a defensive midfielder. And I hopefully was just trying to make something happen, right? But a lot of times it's like Bruce would get the ball and he would just fucking whack it up to the front net. And then, like, these guys are good enough that they take that away. So you're just – they're coming back at you, right?
You're one-dimensional now, and you're just wave after wave.
Yeah, and at some point in time, they're going to crash the shore one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I would say, like, I don't know, I feel this is where, like, you're a family member. Like, I can play in a defensive team, but, like, you got to give me an outlet to go for it. That's the type of player I am. I think that's 100% the type of player you were. And if you're doing that dog work for 90 minutes, it's, well, what's the end goal? Not to concede and to bow out gracefully? No, I want a chance to win it.
And if you concede, when you're playing like that, if you concede early, what's plan B now? You're still sitting? I mean, you have to, you know. True.
But, like, right. Let me ask you a question. You look at all the young kids, right, playing soccer, right? Yeah. What do they want to do? Do they want to defend or do they want to score a goal?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a great
point. In my opinion, kids want to score goals. I want to get the glory. I want to get my name in the paper. I want to score a goal. I want to be the hero.
100%.
Yeah.
But again, you get your responsibility defensively, but it's like you want to score. I think we want to score goals.
Yeah.
So who is your best coach of all time? Even when you're younger, who was the coach that planted that seed that helped you see yourself in the game? Like
the guy that I liked the most was the guy that traded me. His name was Johnny Giles.
Oh my God! From Leeds United. Leeds? Wow!
Wow! Crazy.
He was at Whitecaps.
He was at Whitecaps.
And he traded you. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, because I told him to fuck off, but that's the last time.
That's brave. He was a hard man, wasn't he?
He was a hard man.
Why did he play?
But he played. Him and his brother-in-law was Nobby Styles. You know who Nobby Styles is?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
In the World Cup, won the 66 in England, right?
Yeah. You had Alan Ball on your team.
Alan Ball, right? But he lived with me, like Nobby Styles. But what I'm saying is, like, he allowed you to play. He said, if they score 3, we score 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
I love that.
I like that philosophy.
Yeah.
Right? We score 2, we score 4, we score 5.
Yeah.
Let's go play. And you know what, though? You look at the Alex Ferguson teams, they used to score goals. Yeah. Mourinho, he sucks, man. I mean, like, he's like defensive, right? That's like boring.
Yeah. But I would argue with people, Jerry, like to your point, like to be a great team and to win leagues on a regular basis or to like win a league over 36 games, you have to score goals. You don't see defensive teams win or be a dynasty for a long period of time. Sir Alex was a 20-year dynasty because his team's played, and I hate Man U.
Yeah, I'm a Liverpool guy. I'm a Kenny Dalglish guy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, 3 of them. So we're going to move on here to my all-time dumb Mark questions, just because I love this stuff. The setup at the World Cup, like were you guys in a hotel together, all of you? Like, did you have to like four to a room with Canada's budget, or how was that? Like, I need to know this nitty gritty. Second part of that question, were you guys on like lockdown like players would be now, or were you out in Mexico like just salsa dancing like till 3 a.m?
Lockdown.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. They had a hotel, right? They had us like quarantined, but they had like isolated, and they had a hotel, and it was all blocked off. And we had the freaking, you know, the Mexican, if I remember correctly, there was like security all around the hotel. There was nobody coming in, nobody coming out, unless you knew them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the accommodations were excellent. Stephen's probably, I don't know, I guess Uncle Paul. Remember Annie Emery's Uncle Paul?
Yeah.
So I didn't play in the first game, right? So Paul goes to me, like my brother-in-law goes to me, goes like, hey, can you give me a lift? Oh, I got to get to the hotel. And says like, not a problem. We'll get you there, right? So he gets on the freaking Canadian bus, right? And we've got escorts in the front, escorts in the back. And we're, I can't remember where the hell we are, but we take him to the airport. We got officials in front of us, right? We got a police escort, right? They turn around. When they turn to the left to go to the hotel or to the airport, they stop the highway on both sides, right? Stop it. Bus goes in, drops Paul off, and everybody's going like, who the hell is this guy, right? Dropped him off, come back to the highway. We get back on the highway, we've got an escort, and then we're off to the races. But they shut a highway down for Paul Leone. So.
Wow.
What about your dad? Didn't he get lost?
Okay, so you want to hear the story?
100%.
Yeah, road stories.
Okay, so here's the deal. So my dad likes to have a beer, right? Okay, so first game, I got this guy in Vancouver, hooks him up to come to Mexico. Goes to Azteca Stadium, okay? So he goes, the stadium, there, the people are sitting here. My dad enters here, goes for a beer or whatever, goes to the other side, can't find the group, right? Gets lost in Mexico City. He has to go to a place called Irapuato, which is probably like 3-4 hours away.
No.
Turns around, drunk as a skunk. Well, let me say intoxicated.
Intoxicated.
Some guy picks him up in a car. All of a sudden, he thinks he's been kidnapped in Mexico.
Yeah.
Jumps out of the car, goes to a police station. My guys, who are like the tour group from Vancouver, are looking for 3 hours in around Mexico City Stadium, Azteca Stadium, looking for this guy. Can't find him. They head to their hotel 3 hours away. Ends up, my dad gets a freaking bus ticket or a ride to this freaking place at the hotel in Mexico where they are. Next day he walks up, and then the tour guide walks down to the lunchroom or the breakfast area. My dad's sitting having a freaking like breakfast. I goes, what are you doing? He goes like, oh no, I got here, right? They were panicking because they didn't want to call me and say your dad's been lost. He's been kidnapped.
Oh my God.
I love that he jumped out of the car like he's like a cartel.
Oh my God, he thought he'd been kidnapped. He really did. He thought he'd been kidnapped.
Tuck and roll. Tuck and roll out of the car.
Coming for Tommy Gray, the cartel. They don't want Jerry and Tommy involved in this World Cup.
Yeah. Oh, that's
unreal.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Good story. Good fun.
Yeah. So you mentioned breakfast area there. Again, nerd Mark question. Did you bring, like, was it so Canada budgeted, like World Cup? Like, did you bring your own chefs, your own food, or were you eating Mexico? Oh, no. So you did, eh?
We had our own chef. Had it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was first class. They did a good job. It was first class. It's the World Cup.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's what Mark's getting at.
It was the Canada budget.
That's what he was getting at. Like, was it supported well because it's not the hockey team?
Yeah. That's
No. It was Canada budget. World Cup, it was top notch.
That's nice. Amazing.
Yeah. That's in 1986.
Yeah, well, we were going to say 86. We thought you were at a Hotel 8 and you're in Randy Samuels sleeping in the same bed as you.
So speaking of Canada soccer, now it's many years later. Are you in any way still connected with Canada soccer? But I don't mean by coaching or anything, but are there like alumni event weekends or are there reunions of kinds or anything like that?
It's more from the club level, like the Whitecaps will reach out to me and say, hey, come on up or whatever. When they won the soccer bowl, the NASL soccer bowl back in 79, they had a reunion then. But from a Canadian standpoint, no. I mean, I'm not hearing anything from the CSA or I don't know, who's running the CSA now? I don't know who it is.
I don't know. I don't know.
Sure. No, it's more on a club level, but I don't know, because to me it's like I'm a Toronto kid to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But people know me in Vancouver because when I was 18, I went to Vancouver.
Is that a shame? Do you like, for me, I'm like the biggest Canada soccer. I love it. I mean, don't you think if you're at the top, like, is this just me, weird, crazy man talking, but should you, I don't know. Should the old, like alumni, the hockey,
the 86 team, an alumni of the 86, like have them come back or something. Like
at the Hall of Fame. I mean, you'd think John, like the Herdman guys and everybody would invite that to World Cup qualifiers, like all the qualifiers here, bring the alumni and talk to the, am I crazy for thinking this?
Well, I know that, if there's a World Cup game, then I can call up the CSA and I can get tickets, right? So that's my understanding. So, I mean, because I live in the West Coast, it's like most of the games are Edmonton, Toronto, whatever. We can't get in the country right now anyway.
Yeah.
It's just lockdown, right? So, but before, if I needed tickets for a game, I can get tickets. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's good for the Whitecaps.
No reunions.
Good for the Whitecaps. That's classy of them, you know, like the stuff like that. I think that's a good club.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yes. Yes. They are. No, they've been very good to me. The Whitecaps did a great job for me. Yeah.
So how come Canada's never gone back since 86? I mean, I think they've got a real good class now. I would say these kids like Davies and Jonathan David, who's from Ottawa, Jerry, like, these are some big time guys that aren't just like, it's something I like that Bunbury said, like, it's not just robotic people fitting into a team. Like, these are guys who can win you games. Like, hopefully if you go to a World Cup with those guys, you let them try and score some goals, right? Like, how come since then, how come 90 didn't get there? How come, you know, we didn't get back 94? Like, what do you think happened? And I'm not asking you to rip Canada. I'm just asking for an honest opinion.
I mean, I think we were very fortunate. You know what, though? I think we're very fortunate when we qualified in 86. I think one of the big guys who I give a lot of kudos to is Georgi Pekos. Mm-hmm. Right? Do you know Georgi Pekos?
He was involved in the CSA, no?
No.
No? Then I don't know.
He's an amateur guy from Victoria.
Right? Okay.
Amateur soccer player, Victoria. He scored the goal against Honduras
that
gave us a win, right?
Yeah.
And then, but he's like I say, the goal he scored was a huge for Canada, right?
Yeah.
But I would say, like, to me, I think, I don't know if money is is the reason for why they don't qualify now, because if you're making million, 2 million, I don't know, 500 grand. Maybe it's not as important. When we were playing, we were probably making, let's say we'd making 100 grand, 50 grand, 100 grand, whatever it is, right? But we played because we worked our freaking ass off and we all worked as a team, right? I mean, we were proud to be Canadians. I mean, like I say, like all the Scottish people and the Irish people and whatever it is, but we all were Canadians and we were fighting for it. We were going in the same direction.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I think these guys make too much money and they go like, I don't give a shit about Canada. I don't know. It's just an impression.
Yeah. No.
Bunbury didn't say that. Bunbury, which surprised me in his last interview when he didn't go to West Ham, and like, I would definitely go to West Ham and not play for Canada to make money, 100%. And I'm born in Canada, but I think. What about the idea of like the country's so big? Like I'm small. Just a little example, but I'm wearing my Canadian deaf national team. My parents are deaf, so I coached the deaf national team. We got zero support from CSA. I remember we were in Venezuela, and I gave my room to my team captain because he couldn't share a room with another guy because I don't know, his girlfriend came. I just wanted him to be happy. So I slept on the sofa of one of the managers or something because we didn't have enough money for another room. I had to pay for my own water, but also in the train, the country is so big. All our players were from Toronto because we couldn't fly. We had one guy from Vancouver that could, his parents could fly him out, but no one like it's the country. Do you think the countries were just way too big?
Huh. Well, I think most of your players, I mean, I don't know if it's too big because most of your players seem to come from either Toronto, right? Vancouver, right? Or Quebec, right? Maybe Montreal, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't mean it in a bad way, but that's the way it looks to like all when I see it, right? But to me, it's like I think they got to do it because they want to represent our country. I mean, money's not the big thing in this whole thing, right? You want to, I mean, Alex said like he would rather play for Canada than play for West Ham, right? That's what he said.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But to me, it's like it's a generation. We're the yeah, group that I came from. We're immigrants and then freaking local guys, right? It's Mike Sweeney, I like guys, and Bridgie, right? And I mean, they're here to. It's a way out to where upward in your class mobility, whatever. I don't really, you know. But it's like to me, it's like it's a. We played for Canada and we worked all our ass off. That's what I got. And I think some of these guys make too much money to go like, shit, if we don't qualify, who cares? I can still make my X number of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so speaking of that, in that connection, you were player coach for the Blizzard and Steelers, right? Or were you player coach?
For the Steelers. For the
Steelers.
Not for the Blizzard.
Okay. So you're a player coach for the Steelers. So you coached, and I think, you kind of hit it already, but you coached in the PDL with Tacoma many years later, correct? Mm-hmm. Now, I was going to ask, what's the difference between the players now and the players that you coached back then?
Well, I think the PDL to the CSL?
Just kids in general, players in general. Like, is there a difference in attitude now? Was there a difference in attitude back then? What's the difference between when you started coaching a kid in Tacoma and when you were kind of, you know, running things back then?
Well, I think that the CSL was still a way they were getting paid. The PDL, they didn't get paid, right? Number one, right? It was more like a college transition to the potential of the pros, right?
Yep.
Whereas the CSL was you were getting paid, you know, Mario, the Bartolomo, is that his name? What's Mario's last name? Remember?
Yeah, the Bartolomo. I don't know. He's the Barca guy.
Right?
Yeah.
He was paying people money, right? And there was a way to out, and there was a way to keep the game going. That's what the CSL was like. The PDL is more like just a development league, right?
Yeah.
And it's like it was just college players that were trying to get to the next level.
Yeah. What did you think of those kids? Were they coachable? Were they a different breed from when you grew up? That, you know, was it all about the color of their boots, or were there actual players that cared?
I think they cared. I would say though that like to me it's like the players of that. The players are more like to me. I think some of the players now are more athletes,
mm-hmm.
right, than soccer players, right. You look at Messi. Is Messi an athlete or is he a soccer player?
Soccer player.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that even the EPL team, the teams, like, they're athletes, right? But that's also, you know, strength and, you know, stamina and all that stuff. But yeah. the guys that make the difference is going to be, you know, Messi and Maradona. And, you know what I mean? Those are the superstars, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Ryan Giggs or whatever, right? I mean, the guys who can go buy people will make more money than an athlete all day long. My opinion, again.
No, I love that debate. Jason and I have it all the time. Athlete versus soccer player. You know, like I'm coaching a U10 team. His son's on it, and it's athlete versus soccer player. His son is a soccer player. His son goes to bed. He thinks of a formation. He's 10 years old, and I'm like, that's incredible. But he makes the difference for me in our games. You know, like he's... And he's 10 and he could go nowhere. He could just not play soccer next year. It doesn't matter. But the point being, I it's that soccer player that gives you the edge. There's always something extra upstairs for those people.
Yeah. I mean, there's a balance for everybody, but the guys who make the difference are the soccer players.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. So we're going to flip it here unless Steve has a couple other questions, but we're going to move to some rapid fire questions.
Yeah. Let me give another piece, because Jerry, you gave me a really good piece of advice, and like I said earlier, like, you know, I thought I don't want to say you're ahead of your time, because you're gonna get a big head and you're gonna call Platini and be like, you remember me, don't you? Like, it's gonna be one of those, like, you're floating in the sky already, like a hot air balloon or something. But you know, like I said, Barca-esque before then, like you were a small diminutive player, let's use that as a word, right? But I remember when you were here in Ottawa, I remember talking to you and I said, like, you know, what do I do? Like, what are, give me some advice. I remember one particularly, we went across to a field and we were playing. You said, listen, like, you actually stopped. You said, just, you want to play center mid? Think of center mid like this. You're the middle, you're the hub of a wheel. You're the hub. And on the wheel has all these spokes. And those spokes go out to all the different players, left back, right back, mid striker, winger. And you said, you're just spinning the wheel. You're spinning the wheel. The balls come from the left wing and there's pressure there. You got to spin the wheel. It's got to go. Maybe the right back, he's overlapping. Maybe to the left. Like, what a wow. great piece of advice.
I still love that. Wow.
As a 43-year-old, I still remember that. And like, you know, I say Barca-esque and that gets used too much, but that's a soccer player's answer. And that's an answer that when people talk about developing, those are the things that soccer, that kids need to know growing up. Like, that's something I'm going to tell Jason's son. Because that's where he plays, and I hope it sticks with him. And, you know, pressure here, soccer's a game of opposites. You went left, you got to go right. You went forward, you got to pull it back. Like, those are things that make a difference. Like, that is, that just stuck. Like, that's development to me. And that was like 120 minutes before you had, like, your steak pie and you went to play a game or something. And it was just off the cuff. Like, but that's coaching. Like, I respect that immensely.
Yeah. And you know who else? Took advice from Jerry Gray that I spoke to today. Carl Valentine is a friend of mine. I spoke to him today and he said, your piece of advice to him, okay, you were 19 years old and you told him, always pay your bills before you pay anything else. And he said that was the very Scottish in you.
I got a better one for you than that. How about this? You want to hear a better one?
Yeah. Yes, I sure do.
So I live with Carl Valentine and Bruce Grobler, right? Play for Liverpool. Bruce, right? And I used to make dinner, right? So Scottish. So rather than freaking having to, like, clean the dishes and all that stuff, I'd take, like, a tin pan and I would put a piece of tin foil on it, right? And I'd make the chicken or the steak or whatever it is, right? And then they would go, like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you know, but you know what? When it's easy cleanup, you just take the tin foil away, throw it away. Bob's your uncle.
That's the stuff you need to learn early. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Carl says hi, by the way. Yeah. Carl says hello. And
You talked to him today?
Yeah. No, I told him you were coming on and I said, send me some.
Is he next? You going to get him next?
I would love to get him on. Yeah. No.
I'll get him for you. No big deal.
Yeah. Done. Yeah. Maybe we'll have you both on and we'll play like Family Feud. Yeah. So
I can get Jerry the national team players on. No big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you say Bruce Grobler? Did I get that? Did I miss that? You lived with Bruce Grobler?
Beg your pardon?
You lived with Bruce Grobler?
Yeah. Him and Carl Valentine and I.
Wow. Because Bruce Grobler ended up coaching at Ottawa Fury.
Yeah. He was here.
Yeah. Well, he was also with, was he in Newfoundland, whatever?
Yeah, he was in Newfoundland for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good guy. Bruce is a good guy.
Yeah.
Just like to. So,
that story stays in the vault. Go for it, Mark.
That's vaulted. So we're going to rapid fire. And I asked Alex this question, so I have to add Alex Bunbury. Oh. Who wins in the bench press? You or Bunbury? He said him.
Hello. Hello. He's a skinny guy. I'm like muscles. Me.
All right.
Never bet against the Scots.
Wow.
No, definitely not.
We can always think that way, right?
That's right.
The best Canadian player you ever played with.
Best Canadian player?
Yep.
Be honest.
You know what? There's a couple out there. Can I give you a couple?
Yeah, let's hear it.
First and second, though.
I think I would agree with Alex when it comes to Dale Mitchell.
Wow.
Very good player. I would say Mike Sweeney. And I would say Bronco Sagota.
Wow.
Okay. I love it. I love this.
Oh, good. Let's classify Sweeney as underrated, and the other two as two answers because he gave
love it.
Popped out.
That is
true. Buddies. He's got buddies. He doesn't want phone calls. You know, look at him. He wants to go golf with these guys.
You know what, though? Yeah, probably Sweeney was the most underrated player.
Yeah.
Because he was a motherfucker. He was the first guy sent off in the 1986 World Cup.
Oh, wow.
Google it.
Yeah.
Done. Wow.
So who is the best Canadian indoor player?
Ooh. Best Canadian indoor? Jerry Gray.
Yeah.
Love it.
God, love it. Wow, I love that.
Yeah, me too.
That's a guess. What the hell?
Whose microphone sounds the best, me, Steve, or Jay?
Yours.
You're winning.
Sorry, Steven.
That doesn't matter. You know what? Turnaround.
I was the worst for weeks and weeks and weeks until I bought this
beauty. Sounds so good.
You're dropped into a pit, okay, against a king cobra. Who comes out alive? It's a big soccer question.
Me?
Yeah, you, a king cobra, pit.
Who comes out alive?
Who comes out alive?
You beat the cobra.
What?
Yeah.
Does the cobra bite you, and like, are you good enough to like take care of the cobra?
Give it a volley to the head and jump out of the pit.
All right, best pit answer we've had.
A volley as well. How about that?
Left footer.
I love it.
And the pits at the Azteca, Mark.
Oh, there you go. There was a moat around Azteca. Do you know that?
There you go.
Wow.
It's your second home, Jerry. You'd be fine in the moat.
and your dad's pouring beer all over you in the pit.
What has more rain, Vancouver or Glasgow?
Ooh. That's close. That's really close.
Yeah.
Winter or summer?
Summer.
Glasgow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think Sean Dyche is a good manager?
I don't know who Sean Dyche is.
So the answer is
that's
no.
That's the best answer ever.
Yeah.
Wait, a second. Is that the girls' coach?
No.
No. Exactly. No. Yeah, no, it's the Burnley coach. He's a recurring theme on this show.
The guy from Burnley.
Yeah,
that's right.
Ask me the question again, because I know who he is.
Do you think Sean Dyche? Wait, hold for editing. Okay. Do you think Sean Dyche is a good manager?
Yes.
Oh.
Wow. Flipped on you, Jay. I love that.
But you didn't know him. That means he's not swashbuckling enough for you, Jerry. He's not going to tell you to go win the World Cup.
I agree with you there, but you know what, though? Here's the deal. That mother gets the guys to play for him, and he gets results.
True.
Sure. Yeah,
I like that. Sure. Would you rather, Jerry, have won a game at the World Cup or beat Brazil in the Olympics in the quarters?
Won a game at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Interesting. I like that. I think you were going to go the other way on that one, though.
Well, you know what? To me, it's like if you win a game, then it just sets a standard for the next crew coming through.
Yeah, I think World Cup. I think people remember Canada winning a game. I do.
If I scored a goal in the World Cup, I'd be like bars. I'd be getting free beers in Toronto.
Jerry, you wouldn't be on this show. You would be too good for us.
That's true.
I would. You can organize it. I would.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So we're gonna move on to the last portion is the quiz, but I want to say something real quick. It's kind of now a theme to the show where we kind of bring in a little, not a gushy thing, but like something that I like to wrap it up. And just thank you for coming on, because you are the important people of Canadian soccer. Without you, without the Bunburys, without the guys that, you know, this new age probably don't know about, without you guys, they have nothing to play. We don't have the leagues we have now. We don't have the CPLs we have now. You guys are it. And I'm urging the young players, go online, watch the YouTubes, learn about these guys, because you can't enjoy the Jonathan Davids, the Alfonso Davies, without knowing the Jerry Grays. You can't. So go and do it. Learn the history of Canadian soccer, because it's huge. It's bigger than the Alfonso Davies and Davids right now. Okay, these guys achieved it. So go and do that, please, for us at the Soccer Snobs. Okay, so before that,
no,
have,
I got,
you guys have anything to add to that?
First of all, they probably could have done without you, Jerry, so I'll just ask my question. Just kidding. You. I was like, you got serious. You did not like me there all of a sudden. I couldn't deal with that. Okay, I got two serious questions I want you to tell, because we like to think that of our three listeners that a couple of them are coaches and maybe one's a kid here in Ottawa and they need to know things and advice. So what are two or three things that made you a success in soccer, made you pro, let you have your 12 seasons or your 10 outdoor and your 6 indoor? What was it? What are a few things that you'd lay down to them?
I would say, I tell my grandkids, I say, you do your best, you work your ass off, and you win.
Yeah.
I'm here to win. I win. I will do whatever I can to win. Right. And, but within the boundaries, right. I won't cheat and all that stuff. Right. But if you work your ass off, do your best, that's all you can do.
Yeah, I would cheat to win. I would do what Henri did. I would do a handball in a goal and say it didn't go off my hand. Wouldn't you? I would do that in a heartbeat to get in the World Cup. I would stab Steve to get in the World Cup.
But if you're talking about kids, right? The kids. Yeah. I tell my grandma.
No, but I'm just – I know you're right. No, you're right. Yes. The kids. But, I mean, wouldn't you at that top level just –
I would do whatever I can win. Yes. I would send it as far as
I like that about you.
I win. I try to win every day.
I love that.
I mean, let's look at your answer earlier, like the hamstring thing. That is an answer of not playing because you want Canada to win. I'm sure you were confident enough, and you answered it. You thought you belonged at that World Cup, and that's how you should be if you're there. And you said, I'll sit. Yeah, you want to play two games and not just one. But, I mean, it's Platini. You got to be 100%. And that's a winner's answer, I think.
Well, thank you. That's very nice.
And my last question, what is something that's going to shock the living shit out of a kid going pro that might stop them, that you could tell them now and say, listen, this is what's going to happen. You know, whether it's the grind, whatever it is, they're going to go play pro and think they're hot shit because they're the best at Malton or they're the best in Ottawa. And now they're drafted. And they didn't even know what a draft is, and they're in a pro team. What's gonna scare the living daylights out of them and maybe make them quit?
Well, I don't want them to quit.
No, but what is it that could make them? Like, what is it that you when you went through it, it's like, this could break people. This could force them.
To break people, I would say that. When you get to the next level, it's all mental. Mm-hmm. And people are not going to tell you that you're the best. You have to believe you're the best. If you don't believe you're the best, you will not survive. You know, it's like people are going to knock you down.
Yeah.
Because they want to get to where you are.
Yeah.
So you have to believe you're the best, and you got to believe that, you know, you have to believe in yourself. If you don't, you're fucking going to lose. Sorry, excuse the language.
No, fine. It's okay. I mean, that's a great answer. That's really reoccurring. We had a kid on that we coached here at Edwards. He played about 10 years pro and all that. And
oh, yeah.
Alex and different people. And it's a very similar answer. It's, you know, you have to have that level of confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe
it's it's the old adage of nobody's going to help you. You got to help yourself. Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So let's hit that quiz. I want to hit that quiz because it's 5-3 for Steve, and Jay's clawing back. Like, Jay's a huge underdog in these, but he's clawing his way back. He's
clawing back to your pity. You went back and recounted something and you're trying to make.
No, and I'm going to explain that now.
Jerry, I'm a winner. I'm a winner and I'm winning.
You're a winner.
I just win.
Sorry. When it comes to trivia, you should. Should.
So we've had three guests on the show, and all three guests have won the quiz. So the pressure's on Jerry here, too.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. How many people...
Who's answering first, Mark? Give us the order. This is important.
I'm going to give... Always honor the guest with the first answer.
All right.
Okay. Jerry first, Jay second, Steve third. How many people were in the Azteca Stadium when Canadian legend Jerry Gray dinked that goal? How many were in the Azteca Stadium that day?
101.
Jay.
Hold on, Jay. Jay.
101 and 1.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
101,001.
You're such a Price is Right son
That's
of a bitch.
In honor of Jerry Gray, winner. Winner. Do anything to win.
This is how he's calling back here, Jerry. It's dirty. It's Price is Right. Now it's like...
Dude, I thought that was the first answer.
You are, but we give our answers and then Mark tells us. So he bet 101-1.
And one person, yeah.
You're such a... okay, you said 101, Jerry. I'm going to go 99,500.
Wow. Well... Jason Whiting has come through. There was 108,000 people there.
Holy crap.
Is that not insane?
I didn't know there was that.
That's crazy.
They're all little in the stands. I couldn't see them.
That's a crazy amount of people. It must have been deafening.
Now, you know what? When you're playing, you don't hear them.
Okay. Is it far, like with the moat and that? Are they like having a track in between? Is it farther rather than on top of you?
No, but they're, I mean, there's a field and there's a moat, but it's just like a 5-10 yard gully, whatever. Yeah. But it's like what I'm saying is that when you play, you don't hear the crowd.
Yeah.
And you know what it's like, honestly, Jason. If you're talking about your kids, right? It's like you're playing like 11v11. That's your normal field. The crowds don't make a difference.
Yeah,
because you're so involved in the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, thank you beyond words for coming out. This is having Canadian legends on like this. I really hope we're educating the young guys to have a look. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
Legendary. Thank you.
Anything for you, Stephen. At least you, I don't give a shit.
Yes.
Not even with what this good finish. Mic. Come on.
Oh, even with a good mic, exactly. Is that a new mic or something like that?
That's brand. It's brand new. I'm like, who's that? I'm Bob Barker. I feel like I'm holding this little stick. Like, yes. Have your pet spayed or neutered, everybody. Take care.
Thanks very much for listening today. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave us a 5-star review. If you want to get in touch, you'll find us on Instagram at SoccerSnob1, on Twitter at SoccerSnobs1, by searching for us on Facebook, and of course on the web at www.soccersnobs.ca/listen. You can leave us your opinion, give us any comments, and if that's where you want to get nasty, feel free to do so.